and welcome to the 12th edition of the Roots Aviation Podcast. Today we're going to be hearing a conversation about why airports and airlines should form close working relationships to reap benefits, which is really what we're all about here at Roots.
During the podcast, we'll hear from Robert Curry, Group Director of Strategy and Network at low-cost giant EasyJet, and Gordon Dewar, who's the Chief Executive of Edinburgh Airport.
Together, they'll be discussing how EasyJet is building its network at the airport, along with the Worldwide by EasyJet strategy. They also discuss the possibility of alliance-affiliated airports in the future.
This was recorded live at Roots Europe 2018 in sunny Bilbao and formed part of the conference programme, sponsored by Embraer. Don't forget to download some of the other Roots Aviation podcasts, which feature the likes of Alex Kruth from British Airways and Willie Walsh from IAG. Hope you enjoy.
So, Gordon, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm Gordon Dewar. I'm the Chief Executive of Edinburgh Airport and delighted to be here talking about partnerships, which is what it's all about and certainly what it's all about at Roots.
Great. And Robert Curry, the Group Director of Strategy and Network at EasyJet. Been there about 7 months now. And before that was in consulting at McKinsey, working with airlines and airports around the world for the last 11 years. So, why are we here today? Clearly, I think airlines and airports, very symbiotic relationship. We found these nice pictures, EasyJet in Edinburgh, so thought that would be a good kickoff. What we thought we'd do is just start by giving you an intro of how both of us think about the partnership between airlines and airports. So just kicking it off. You know, EasyJet, I think you just heard Ray speak, so probably you'll hear many of these themes coming through and what he had talked about. But how do we think about it? You know, one, we like to think of the relationship really as beneficial to both sides, and we think we bring a pretty attractive offer to many of the airports we're working with. So one, you know, we are growing, and we're a growing, stable partner. If you look at our fleet plan, you can see that underlying fleet growth of where we're headed. We're long-term growing. We really don't have a geographic boundary. I think you've seen, you know, we did the Air Berlin deal last October, which is another expansion into a new, you know, heavy expansion into a new region for us. So we're very excited about that. And we continue to grow. We're very financially stable. So all that creates, as you can see from the few of the bullet points, that they're really a stable partner that you can grow with. Two, we think we offer one of the best networks out there, if not the best network out there. We serve airports, as we like to say, that our passengers and your passengers want to fly to, so very excited about that. We give depth. Not only do we just serve kind of in one-off frequencies, but also we have amongst the highest frequency per route of any LCC. So we really do try to bring a scale to our customers and to the airports that's beneficial. We have a breadth in what we serve, everything from business routes to leisure routes to, you know, let's say less frequent leisure routes, and everything in between. So really a breadth of everything we do, and we have bases throughout the EU. You heard we're just, I believe, now approaching 29 bases this summer. You were 28 before. I think we're up to 29 as of the summer. And they're all over the EU, so we can really offer everything. And finally, we do recognize there needs to be investments in infrastructure and in the passenger experience. You know, we think about we bring a very attractive proposition to the airports and being able to do that because we have a high utilization. We bring a lot of volume, and so that helps obviously defray some of that cost. We also think about it in ways that are cheaper, not only for us, but also for the airports, and such as upgauging over time and bringing larger aircraft, which again allows the airports to gain more scale without necessarily the higher cost. And I think we're one of the pioneers on automation. For anybody who hasn't been there yet, our customer experience that we've gotten to in Gatwick, we kind of think of as our showcase. And that's, we'd love to see that expanded everywhere. And we think that's really a win-win in the automation side. So, you know, to sum up, I think we're fairly straightforward in what we want with airports and how we think about it. We want long-term cost viability. That's what allows us to really keep going with our model. We want to be reassured that our airport partners are making investments in infrastructure and are going to continue that forward in line with what the airport needs, and maybe not a pie-in-the-sky vision. And then as well, we really want to see those improvements in customer experience. We believe we offer more than just travel from A to B, but an experience that our customers value and our customers enjoy. And we want our airport partners to really grow in that together with us. So that's kind of how we think about it. Maybe, Gordon, you want to talk about it from the airport side?
Sure. So I think there's kind of two elements. First of all, I think we're representing our marketplace. So we should know our market better than anyone else. It's the locality, it's both the outbound market in terms of people around Edinburgh and Scotland that want to go out, but equally understanding the attractiveness for people that want to come and visit, study, live, invest into Scotland as well. So we think a big part of what we do is being able to tell that story so that we can put a compelling case in front of airlines and maybe de-risk some of their thinking where we know, and this is the best example of it, routes where there are thousands of opportunities and you've got to get ahead of the curve and use data-driven techniques to reassure airlines that there is a business to be served here. We'll tell the story about good seasonal direction. So we think we've got a great market. I think every airport will see that to some extent. I think what we do maybe a little differently is we invest really heavily in the skill sets and the data sets to not just have an opinion on that, but actually have the facts at our fingertips and really make that case almost to the stage where we'd like to think we're presenting board-ready propositions to airlines. We do that in a very bespoke way as well. I don't think it's right to treat any airline the same as any other. I think we've all got different business models. Obviously, we're going to talk about EasyJet today, but I think it's quite telling that every single one of the deals we have is very different with every different airline. And it's because they ask us for different things and they have different expectations and they have different business models, both at customer service level, but also just the way they look at long-term investment and so on. So we're very, very open, as long as there's a collaborative discussion, to tailor deals, to tailor the service offer, to tailor the way we approach the business in a unique way. And of course, that's got to be focused, as Robert has already said, on productivity and efficiency as well as customer service. The cost base is going to be a key part of the competitive element. It's going to be a key part of the success of a route or not. But we don't believe in being cheap. We believe in being great value. And I think it's about having that conversation about how we can share the right upside, the most sustainable, the most profitable for both of us, routes and service levels that we can give, and do that again through a data-driven exercise, understanding what are we trying to achieve, what does the data tell us is the right answer, and then collaborating to give the best and optimal answer. And that really brings me to the final point on the slide. It's all about partnership. When we've got a great relationship, as we had with Ryanair, with EasyJet, with British Airways, who've been around forever at Edinburgh Airport, we celebrated our 100th anniversary just 2 years ago. Every single one of these relationships is different. And the best sign of relationship, I think, is when you can fall out in a good way. And what I mean by that is giving each other your challenges about why things are not perfect, but then have a really constructive debate, say, well, how are we going to fix it? And then have that trust that when both parties come to the table and deal with it in a data-driven, a customer-centric sort of way, that you know you're getting a good answer and you're getting the best out of each other. It's never perfect, but it's, as long as it's the best it can be and it's done honestly and openly, I think that's when you get the real sweet spot of the relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll cover a couple areas, a few areas today, four questions. I mean, maybe just as intro, why we thought we'd be a good partnership up here. I think EasyJet in Edinburgh, as Gordon just said, we've done a number of deals over time. Those deals have had different flavors to them, and as you heard, kind of customized what each of us needed. And we thought it would be an interesting dynamic to have both of us up here. We won't always agree on everything, and we'll try to be open on those fronts. But at the same time, I think, as Gordon alluded to, you know, despite these differences over time, we've always managed to find a way to work through to figure out what are those objectives and kind of common goals underneath that we can work around and how can we best work with each other, which is, I think, part of the philosophy both of us have. So we'll hit on four areas. As I said, feel free to ask your questions at any point. I've been told you can go to menti.com and the code is 112445, so feel free to log your questions there. But we'll talk about four things. First one around kind of new product offerings. I'll talk a little bit about our worldwide product there that we recently launched last September, and how that how we think that's really an innovative offer, both from us for the airlines, but also for the airport partners that we work with. We'll spend some time then talking about the cost structures and how we think about innovation there. Infrastructure for the future, obviously a big important point for both airlines and airports. And then for, you know, what are the new opportunities and ways to work together, you know, maybe beyond what is traditionally being thought of right now. I will get better at the clicker as we go. All right, so worldwide. How many people here are already familiar with our worldwide product? Okay, good. So I'll give a good introduction to it then, because I think we have a lot of people who are not. So worldwide, it's basically a virtual connection hub, I think is the best way to describe it, that we've introduced for airlines to airlines with an airport sitting at the middle of it. And you know, let me start with a little bit of the background. Why did we launch it? We saw a real opportunity here. You know, connectivity and hubs are really the domain of the legacy flag carriers, and we saw that as exciting, but kind of an untapped opportunity for us. We have almost 70 million of our passengers every year who have to use a hub carrier at some point for their traffic just because it's not something we serve. And we want to offer more and more of what our customers need. So we thought it was something to expand into. We recently expanded it. We now offer it in a number of our airports, everything from Tegel, Amsterdam, the Paris airports, Edinburgh, Gatwick, Malpensa, and even one of the smaller points in our network in Inverness. So a bit all over our network. We now have about half our flights that touch one of our worldwide airports, which equates to 53 million of our passengers per year who are able to use worldwide if they want to. How does it work? Let me give you the very simplified explanation. Essentially, as I said, it's a virtual hub, so you have three parts to the product. There's a part that we sell, there's a part that the other airline sells as their ticket, and then there's a product from an airport in between. We have a partner in this, DoHop, who has designed the technology infrastructure that sits between us. And then basically we have what we've evolved to is almost a tiered offering in how we can think about it. So we can have a basic introductory offer in any airport, essentially, which is two self-connect products, which we've seen grow more and more over time across the airline industry and customers becoming more accustomed to. We have a then more higher standard product, which would be something like what you see in Gatwick Connects or Malpensa, where there is an airport piece that sits in the middle, which from my point of view is the interesting piece when you talk about airlines and airport partnerships, because we think it's another product for our partners to use. And if you heard me list through the airports there, places like Tegel, Venice, Malpensa, Edinburgh, odds are we're not going to recruit any BA to move the Heathrow hub up to Edinburgh sometime soon, despite the vision. But the chance to create that connectivity and give airports a new way to market to long-haul airlines that, I can say, coming from consulting, having worked with 25 airlines, the challenge from an airline's point of view is what do I do in the 8 months of the year that I can't stimulate those passenger volumes on a point-to-point long-haul network? That's where connectivity can become really powerful. Likewise for us, we've talked with some other low-cost airlines around the world who have gone into this product, and they say, this is what allows me to do some of those morning departures where I can launch 30 euro fares. I'm just not going to stimulate the passenger volume. So really, it's a unique offering for both airlines and for the airports to create a product in between that allows you to service the passenger. I don't know, Gordon, you maybe want to talk about it a little bit from the airport side.
I think it's driven by the same thing. It's an opportunity to find new flow that just wouldn't be there before. And whether that gets you a new route because it's the incremental part that just gets it over the finishing line, or whether you're just thickening up existing routes and getting value. I think it's there's a growing customer acceptance of it. There's an expectation because of all the various search engines that you should be able to self-connect. But I think there's a big part of the market is looking for a reassurance around that to make sure that the baggage connection works, that there's a solution if the connection, for whatever reason, gets disrupted. And I think that's the key part. I think it's quite an interesting challenge for smaller airports like Edinburgh compared to Heathrow, where we've fixed the baggage connect, for example, which is relatively straightforward, where we can do a proper connection without having to gather the bag back. But we've not yet found the business case in terms of scale to do a full airside connection for the passenger. Now, that's okay because at the moment it's relatively small flows and we can process it very quickly through an arrivals and a departures process again. But there'll become a critical mass, I think, that says, no, it's now time to invest. But again, that's what will be done in partnership. The airlines won't thank me for going spending 10 million quid on a departure lounge or a transfer lounge that is used by four passengers a day. That won't make sense. And it'll be about how do we grow that in partnership with our big airline partners to make sure that we do the introductions to the long-haul carriers, to other domestic carriers potentially, and then we choose together to when to make the big capital investment to make it another level up yet. I think it's really exciting, and I think for an airport like Edinburgh where we're never going to have the big based carrier doing a hub operation, it's a really unique opportunity, so very exciting.
Exactly. I mean, I think the motto of kind of how we've pitched it, at least, really simple speaks to it, which is simplicity enabling the convenient connections at minimal cost. We want to give those passengers that service and that option of what to do, and we look to our airport partners as a way of differentiating their service in between.
I think for us as well, we've been very active in the long-haul market, but 5 years ago we had one long-haul route and we've got 13 this summer. And it's a very consistent part of the conversation with long-haul carriers is where can we connect, where can we find local partners to do interlining on. So this is, again, an opportunity to take it from what's being almost a sort of individual introduction level and trying to stitch things together in code shares to something that's a bit more easy to plug and play, where people can come in potentially with maybe only three or four flights a week and know there's a product there that they can talk to.
And maybe, you know, building on that point as well, it's interesting when we have conversations with airlines about worldwide. I mean, we've talked with all variety of airlines, and you can see a bit of the flavor of that in our partners. We have everything from Norwegian, WestJet, down to many smaller players as well, you know, La Compagnie and others. Interestingly, what we're finding more and more in our conversations is it's not just, let me call it, large, unaffiliated carriers that are interested in this product. It's actually some of the big majors that are in alliances and JVs into the market, but also recognize they want to serve places like Edinburgh, and, you know, they're not going to have their partner in that city to really provide the connectivity, and we give them a means to fill the plane on the days they can't fill it on local traffic alone. So maybe before we go to the next one, any questions on worldwide or some of the way these services can benefit? Yeah, so the question was, connecting time of the product is too long. Yep.
Is the microphone coming?
Yeah, microphone's coming. So, yeah.
Good afternoon. The connecting time looks me quite long, so you are going to target just leisure passengers missing completely the business travelers.
Yeah, no, it's we know. I think part of our philosophy in it and the way we're evolving it is we wanted to be much more kind of dynamic and agile in launching it. So rather than trying to get the perfect product with an airport and an airline that would allow us to do, you know, much shorter connecting times, we wanted to get in the market, see how it's adapting and go from there. We're already starting to take the connecting times down. It's, I think, 2:30 is our official minimum today. We've started to come down and are approaching 2 hours now in certain places. So we know we need to get it down more if we really want to play. But at the same time, you know, for many of these customers that might not have another option, I mean, I think we're never going to capture the full business market passenger probably. But there's a lot of customers, if we can get it down even probably to an hour, hour and a half, would be much more lucrative than it is now.
And I think it's going to be an evolution of trust because when you're relying upon another partner, airlines relying on an airport, you want to see the evidence that it's capable. So we would confidently say we can do a transfer in 45 minutes. I don't think anybody would want to sign up to that from day one because you run the risk of just disappointing people. I think we could confidently predict an hour and a half very, very comfortably. And I think you go from there and work down. I think the Gatwick Connect model sort of is a really interesting one as well in the sense that it addresses the big, big problem of what happens when you've got disruption. Who picks up the tab? And putting an insurance product in the middle of it, which is what they've done. So the Gatwick Connect will meet the cost of the onward travel if you've missed that connection, that's not your fault. I think that's an area that's very reassuring, and it means you can be a bit braver around connect times because you know the commercial implications of that connection not working aren't as serious otherwise.
If I can, I have a second question. You are telling us airlines and airports are happy together, but Airlines for Europe position is a little bit different. So I would like to ask you your point of view on that. Thank you.
Sorry, different in what regard?
The Airlines for Europe Association is, let's say, complaining about market power from the airports. So instead you are telling us a different story. So okay. I would like to ask you your point of view. Thank you.
Well, I wish I had market power. That would be nice. If you look at Edinburgh Airport as an example, and I think this would be very, very similar for most non-big hub airports. You're competing not only with Glasgow, in my case, Prestwick, laughably, but the rest of Europe. You know, we're trying to encourage airlines who have choice all over Europe to come and serve Edinburgh and Scotland as a result of that. So I think that's that idea that airports have got market power is a bit misplaced. I think we're looking too locally in that regard. But the answer is still, this is actually, in a sense, the airline should be happier with this because, in a sense, if you can do more connections and give more choices about end destinations, you're reducing further from quite a low base, I would argue, airport power again, because now the more choice the customer has, the more choice the airline has, the better. So I think it's all moving in the right direction. Our complete watchword in our business is choice. About giving passengers more choice. We do that at our level, how you check in, how you get to the airport, which routes you fly, but it's true of the entire system where we want to give people choices from getting A to B at the quality of service, the price, the timing that they want, and hopefully you win because you're offering great service at good value.
I mean, look, I'll just say there's a reason we're not up here with every airport we fly to right now, and so, I mean, I think it depends on the airport you're probably talking about in some instances, and you know, there are some where the balance of power is not in the, let's say, in a direction that we think works. Maybe not everywhere, though. So, We have a question from the audience here. What stakeholder do you believe should take the responsibility of protecting the passenger connection? An airport, the airlines, the online sales channels, or some collaboration? I'll start by that one. I think we thought a lot about this when we kicked off Worldwide. I mean, at its core, I mean, you heard Ray Webster up here earlier. We're still a low-cost airline at heart. We don't want to take on all the costs and complexity, or let's say realistically, we can't, because we don't get the fares and the yields to justify it. So, you know, the product is structured right now in a way that we do bear the responsibility for the misconnection on the European part, which is the part we should be bearing responsibility for, but we don't take it on the whole product. And I think that's where we also see an opportunity, though, for a product niche to be put in there that does start taking advantage of that insurance and protect the customer need there.
Sure. No, I'm agnostic about who owns the insurance product. I think that is the answer in the middle. It makes perfect sense for there to be an ownership of the service by the airport, because realistically, airports like Edinburgh don't have feet on the ground. They have handling companies, who will maybe manage many. But fundamentally, I think the airport should own that experience of the transfer. Now, that doesn't mean we have to own the insurance product, although Gatwick's gone that route, for example, but it does mean there need to be repercussions of us getting it wrong, so that we're incentivized for the right things.
So innovative cost structures, you know, I thought I'd just kick off by saying here, I mean, obviously, you heard us both mention what we think we bring respectively for airports and airlines, and we do think we bring a pretty attractive offer. But I think it's also very important to think about it. The same way you heard Gordon describe how they think about every airline differently, I think it's important from our side, you know, the way we think about what we want out of an airport and how an airport pitches to us, for lack of a better term, is very important as well. I mean, we bring a common set of factors, of course, in all the airports. I mean, we go for load factor everywhere we fly, and we bring a higher load factor. We have a wide variety of destinations, and in almost everywhere we serve, we try to bring that spread of destinations we're serving and a mix of traffic, which allows the airport to have different ways of monetizing. I mean, we're able to stimulate on both ends, we think about it. So, I mean, we bring a common set, but if you think about it, you know, if I was thinking about a discussion with, you know, a new, just to take an extreme, beach destination that maybe we're going to serve from a few of our base airports, and collectively we'll bring a couple flights a day across these base airports, but it's going to change in nature depending on where it is, to a discussion with, you know, if we were having a discussion with Edinburgh on an existing base and how we want to grow that base, to, by the way, if we're talking with a new base airport, and I think that's also where, if you think about across the range of these discussions, we see a range of innovative ideas on how we can work together in mutually beneficial ways. Everything from charging structures which, you know, are actually mutually beneficial in what they're trying to develop and support, you know, also to even just ideas of how we can potentially scale faster in some places that make a difference, how we can bring, you know, a mix of traffic that might be beneficial to what the airport needs that rounds out the portfolio well. I mean, these are all sorts of ways that there's a lot of different ways to structure the deal. I think we want to make sure we have a stable cost over time, but now that deal gets structured, we're open to a lot of different ideas.
Yeah, I think we come at it from two ways. First of all, I should say we're very lucky. We're not economically regulated, so we don't have so many rules about how we choose to structure. And I think that allows us the freedom to try and map both the how do we spend, how do we invest, and how do we charge for it into a more, shall we say, partnership, collaborative approach. So we, first of all, want to spend the right amount of money on the right things. And it's about finding the most efficient way to give the service levels that the airlines and we aspire to jointly. And I can come back to some examples around our check-in process, for example, where if we'd done the traditional thing, it would have cost 10 times doing something a bit more innovative. But that needed the airlines to collaborate together as well as collaborate with us. And that was probably a first, I think, getting a common shared self-service check-in area. But the prize of that was knocking tens of millions out of the cost base that we therefore don't have to recover. And therefore we can invest that in other things. So that's the most important thing, is spend the right money on the right things. And then once you've done that, I think you design pricing structures to incentivize the right behaviors. What you don't want is to reward behaviors that cost the airport or indeed other airlines more money. So we try and find ways of recovering these operational investments in a way that drives the right behaviors. So if we're building new stands, we don't want people parked in them for 7 hours, because then we'll have to build more of them and somebody's going to have to pay for it. If we have inefficient use of the baggage system, if we have inefficient use of security, all of these things will end up driving the overall recovery we need to make, But if we keep that low, we can then be quite selective about what mechanism we use to drive the right behaviours. And I think that's been really successful, whether it's peak pricing, whether it's pay-per-use, or whether it's behavioural operational type things you want to get right. I think we see that fairly subtle tweaks in the way that the pricing structures work can be really worthwhile in terms of the whole collaboration of all the airlines and airports together.
Clearly, everybody's nailed the cost structure, so great way to go there.
It's because we're such good value.
That's exactly. That's what it is. That's what it is. Yeah.
One question to Edinburgh Airport. You are saying that you are not regulated, no? How you are structuring your charges? You are including the non-aviation costs?
Yeah, so we have, we're regulated in the sense that we have to consult and we have to demonstrate our cost base and so on, but what we're not regulated on is how we then do deals with airlines, so we can do much more flexible things. Now, the fundamental is we will incentivize growth. We're an airport with capacity, we've got space to grow, so the big driver of the long-term value of my business is about getting growth coming in. So what we do is for established, maybe not growing airlines, there is a fairly traditional structure of how they can expect the costs to be allocated and how they pay for their fair share of things. But because we're not regulated, it then allows us to go and do bespoke deals with airlines that do want to grow. And EasyJet are obviously a very, very successful example of that. Edinburgh Airport is our largest customer. And what that allows us to do is say we will reward that growth through giving discounts or tailoring the structure. So, for example, some airlines will say, we don't want the 22 bits of that pricing structure. I want simplicity. So we can do a very, very simple per-passenger charging model, for example. Not everyone wants it, but it means we can respond to that if that's what an airline asks for. We have done deals around very specific routes where we think there is a market, but there's no obvious taker of that market. We can go out and be much more targeted with pricing and other things to try and encourage people to go and serve that route. And it just allows us to be much more fast moving and a bit more bespoke. We are, of course, still constrained by competition law and general fairness. So what we can't do is offer one airline something we wouldn't offer someone else. So we always structure everything so that if any other airline rocked up and said, I want the same deal, we would be very happy to offer it.
Just going through we have a question here about if we succeed in buying Alitalia, will we take over European traffic in Italy while Air France takes on the long haul? I will not be answering any questions on our potential merger activity today, but we'll keep you guys in suspense there. All right. Moving on. Yep, there we go. Infrastructure around the future. I think both of our airports probably are thinking quite hard about this. And if I take a step back, even before I came to EasyJet, I've gotten the pleasure of working with many airlines around the world and consulting and seeing how many airlines think about this. And it's interesting because as an industry, we're probably not as ahead yet as you would think we should be. I mean, if you think about it, many airlines I've worked with are thinking about what the airport for the future looks like. I've put up here some of the ideas from the EasyJet side, but just to give you a sense, a lot of potential around facial recognition, how that could work in simplifying both the check-in experience and the boarding experience. I think boarding is an interesting one. You've seen a lot of innovations around check-in. Everything from auto bag drops, Qantas has their RFID tags for their frequent flyers, and many different types of ways I think the industry has started to innovate there. Even passport checks that you don't even have to do at the airport anymore, you do it all via the app now. We think that's exactly the way things should head. If you think to the kind of the next dimension, though, thinking ahead towards boarding, boarding is an interesting area where I don't think you've seen quite as much innovation, and at least as we sample our customers, it's one of the greatest pain points for them. If you look at it now and kind of how our CSAT goes on our customer satisfaction, we do very well through the check-in process. Security, quite honestly, depends a lot on how the airport is structured and what they've invested in there. And then when you get to the gate, it's a pain point. And look, we take responsibility, obviously, for some of that in our boarding procedures, determine a lot of it. But it's an area ripe for innovation, we think. And we think it can quite honestly benefit both sides. If you think about it, if you have an efficient boarding process, you'll be able to have passengers more time in retail and experiencing the experience of the airport. They'll leave with a better satisfaction from the airport, more likely to use and more likely to travel. Interestingly, we did some work in with one of our airport partners with Luton. And in Luton, we found that actually by calling passengers to the gate later, our CSAT went up because they were not having enough, you know, that's partially probably driven by what's going on in the construction in Luton. But it is something where, you know, different approaches can yield different results. And we think that's really an area to develop going forward.
No, and I think this is an area that airlines and airports are utterly aligned on. You know, we want to have a great customer service. We want to keep the cost base down. Technology offers us all these advantages, and I like the recognition. We want to have them in the shops a bit longer as well. I think what you've got to do, though, is understand the different geographics of an airport. So Check-in, for example, I'll give you a really good example of this. Check-in, we have worked really hard on ensuring that there are no queues. But we've done that because we recognised one of the main constraints we had was that we had too few injection points, conveyor belts, into the baggage system. And building more of them would have been horrendously expensive because we'd have had to build more space and just connecting to the baggage system. So instead, for the moment at least, we've done remote check-in self-service to do all the cost stuff, to get the efficiency so we don't have people standing in queues. They're just quickly post themselves, but there is a second step where they then inject the bag into a bag drop. Now, that's not absolutely ideal, but it's not particularly bad, and the CSAT say that customers are reasonably happy with it. It doesn't yet fit the one-stop, one-process ideal that I think EasyJet are understandably chasing. We just need to have that conversation. You know, we could do it, but the cost is probably an unattractive one. Yeah. So we've got to bide our time, if you like, and say, well, when do we get the opportunity to redesign cost-effectively to allow the one stage? And in the meantime, let's make sure the two stage works really well and gives us 90% of the benefit, if not 100%.
Yeah. No, that's a great example. I think we have different points. I mean, we spend a lot of time kind of modeling out how we thought our customers most wanted that baggage check-in process to go, and what they've come back with, and what we see is that they like that one point, that one-stop check-in. That said, to your point, you know, Gordon, it is something that is going to cost more machines, and clearly we're a low-cost carrier, so we think hard about that trade-off, and then it comes down to understanding what is the benefit we think we can get from the higher CSAT, and is that worth it versus, you know, what is it going to mean with a two-step process. So we think that's absolutely something to innovate around and something we can work together on.
We never say no, we just show them the invoice, and then they say no. So
then we say no very quickly. But yeah, I think that's an overview. Questions on kind of how we think about the future, investing in the future? I will add one more point here, actually, while we're thinking about questions. I think it's very different in you think about base airports versus destination airports. And you know, in my first 7 months or so at EasyJet, this is one that I think we need to do some more thinking about. And we'll look to airports to kind of give us interesting ideas here. But if you think about it, with an airport like Edinburgh, where we have the scale, and they come back to us with a bill or an invoice on something, it's easier for us to justify an investment there. We can point back to, we have a base of customers, we know what those customers want. Some of our employees, quite honestly, are those customers. And so we have a pretty good feel, and we can see how it'll return. But if you think about that, you know, our core customers live in these base cities. And on the return legs of their trips, many times they're going to fly from a spoke in our network, so to speak, in using conventional language. And those different airport experiences are going to be very different than what they get in their base airport. So how can we leverage technology to make that even more seamless for the customer? How can we make sure that, you know, they are recognized both on the departure and the return leg, and they have a great customer experience? If they have a great airport experience on departure out of Edinburgh and then have a, quite honestly, clunky 20-year-ago experience on the return flight, that doesn't leave a very good taste in their mouth. And that's something we need to strive to think about how best to achieve as well. And I think airports can serve a great role in that one, where if you're that destination airport, you have the scale to bring together multiple airlines that are all going to be facing the same problem and can think about new solutions there.
I think our point of view on that is, if we've got something that works, we're very happy to share it as well. We don't see that as a competitive thing, far from it. We see if the other end of the route's working really well, that makes that route more likely to be successful and more passengers on it. So we'd be very open to talking to maybe an up-and-coming airport at the other end of a route that's looking for a technology solution or a bit of advice about how they can focus their efforts. I would have no hesitation about that.
Yeah. And then the other one that I'll call out that I think in the infrastructure of the future that probably both airlines and airports are going to have to think hard about is around disruption. You know, quite honestly, 261 has changed the game for airlines, for us and we suspect all of our competitors as well. And it's changed the cost metrics. And while I know most of the industry likes to comment on the nature of the European versus U.S. airline networks. Having seen almost every airline network there is around the world, I do think the U.S. airlines have done quite a bit of thinking around how technology can change the passenger experience and disruptions, and how you can use it to best offer a customized offering to the passenger. And again, this is something where we can think quite hard about what we do together with the airports, because ultimately when our passengers are disrupted, they are in an airport. And so how we get that service to them, how we can think about that is really important. And it's something where we're looking for new ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a pressing need. I mean, no other industry has got these cost base put on them for third-party issues or even external issues happening. I think that's a lost cause, unfortunately. It's easy. I can talk about this as much as an airline can. I think it's very deeply unfair and actually not a very good economic argument, but it's happened, and I don't see anybody reversing it. So the industry as a whole is going to make sure that we're not just getting sunk by the problems that arise from the compensation culture around that one. And as we get busier and with a lot of technology change coming around airspace management in Europe, I think there's a big risk running at us.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to make sure that we're ready to deal with that so that we can mitigate these costs and reduce these costs as far as possible. Because they can be a ridiculous multiple of the fare paid, and it just doesn't make any sense economically.
No. All right. Any questions on this one before we move on? All right, new geographic areas. I know, Gordon, you want to kick this one off?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to make sure this is in, because, and I think I alluded to it right at the start, an airport should know its market better than any airline. Now, if an airline's operated out of that market for many years, I'm sure they'll have caught up and they'll have understood it. But even then, they will have multiple tens, dozens, hundreds of airports potentially, and they simply can't keep up. When when GIP bought the airports back in 2012, we inherited a team of 1.5 people and no data to understand and explain our market to airlines. So when we came to Roots, we came with an opinion, is probably the best way I put it. A very warm opinion and a very colourful opinion about what a great city Edinburgh is and a great country Scotland is. But it wasn't data-driven. And the one thing you learn very, very quickly in this business, if the numbers don't stack up, nobody's interested. So I think it's absolutely incumbent on any airport to really get under the skin of that marketplace, because not only will you be able to service the conversations that are happening potentially from the airline coming and pitching to you as much as you pitching to them, but all of a sudden you start understanding the long-term opportunity, you start thinking wider about how to leverage that market, not just explain it, but actually start influencing it. A great example of this is we did a huge amount of data about 5 years ago and bought lots of new sources, not all of which work out. You have to kind of learn by experience as to which ones are most valuable. But we're actually really surprised to find that the biggest driver of business class travel out of Edinburgh was education. Now, that was a real surprise to us. We expected finance services, we expected oil and gas, all the more traditional ones. But what happened almost by, secretly, is over 10 years with the changing face of education in the UK, where all the universities have to fund themselves by selling to either overseas markets or bringing international students in. They had invested hugely in outreach stations in the Middle East and the Far East and elsewhere, and huge numbers of researchers and lecturers were going back and forth between their campuses. And we realized that was now the biggest thing. Now, what does that mean? What do you do about it? Well, first of all, it's a great sales pitch, because these guys travel all year round, all front class, all front cabin, and are good repeat business. And you can go and send your sales team in from the airline to talk to the university. So you've got a big corporate market there to talk to. But more importantly, we find we can actually stimulate it even further. And we were actually talking to the universities about where they expected to go. And one of the constraints was that they couldn't really see a market or a business case for setting up in City X, because the time to get there via connections was too much. So we had a ready-made sales pitch for selling 3-4 seats a week minimum, J-class, through an airline, which is a warm start of conversation. And that is completely invisible today because they're not traveling. But we've got almost a sort of contractual level commitment from the university saying they would buy that if the service were available. Mm-hmm. So it's that's actually not just the understanding and selling today, but actually being able to influence what will happen in the future and give reassurance to airlines that their business is there for them to achieve. So my only comment about all of that is really get under the skin, really understand what your market is, and you've got a far better quality conversation with an airline about convincing them to come and give it a go, because we are acutely aware it's many, many millions to set up a new route, and there's a lot of risk associated.
Yeah. I think EasyJet has been in the news quite a bit lately about how much more we are going to focus on data. And I think this is just one of the many dimensions of how an airport can bring real benefit to us and real new insights. Because, you know, as Gordon said, you know, I have a network team. It's you know, great for the size we are, but I don't have an army of 50 working on our network. And so we're never going to get into the level of insights and individual markets that an airport can bring us and know their catchment area as well. Even in a, you know, in, we have a base in Edinburgh. I mean, we're not able to spend as much time even on that one as we would like. And so I think it's something that's a real mutually beneficial area. You know, I like to make this comment in many discussions I have, even with my team, and thinking about new ways to approach. You know, I lived in Jakarta for 3 years, and it always used to amaze me. Between Jakarta and Taipei, three airlines flew it, and all three left Taipei at 9 o'clock in the morning and went back at 2:30 in the afternoon. And I'm sure if they looked at their MIDT data sitting underneath, that said that was the peak time to get the ultimate in passenger yields out of the flight. But realistically, I think everybody knows that not every passenger between those two markets would want to go at 9 o'clock in the morning and 2:30 in the afternoon. And so finding new data sources that partners could bring to airlines that can help us think about new dimensions. I think we get pretty good access to breadth of data, especially if you think about different dimensions of travel and partners we can work with and how we can bring those data sources together. That's fantastic. But if you think about real local data sets and, you know, what are the catchment areas we can pick up, both on the, you know, if we're thinking about a base, what are the catchment areas around it, where could we pick up, and what kinds of traffic patterns do we see coming out of there? But also on the destination side, you know, what are the real areas that are powerful to come there? How could we make, you know, we serve, you know, four London airports. How can we think, you know, is a route going to do better if we serve it out of Gatwick versus Luton, and where are the areas around London that we can pull from? I think there's a real opportunity for airports to help give us new information there and help us get even more refined networks and quite honestly make win-win deals for the both of us that make the service a success.
I mean, for the airports in the room, you'll know GIP are not the most generous in terms of they're very focused on cost efficiency and productivity. One of the biggest investments we've made in the headcount was we went from that 1.5 people 5 years ago to a team of 8 now, and I would confidently say that's the best investment we've ever made. So we don't do it lightly, but it pays into dividends hugely.
Yep. Absolutely. Questions around these kind of new ways of working together and new opportunities for airlines and airports to work together. We have a question for you here, Gordon.
Is it okay? Do you think you can woo Norwegian back on these lost US routes? Is the tax issue in Scotland close to being resolved? Right. Thank you for that one.
Is Norwegian in the audience right now? Just to check. No. Okay.
So for those of you not familiar, Norwegian started three routes into America, in Rhode Island, New York, and Connecticut as well. And it's a tough ask. They're trying to do very low-cost fares, long-haul. We know in the past many people have tried it. I think Stuart is working really, really well, looking very solid, and the other two were soft. One's gone now, and one's reduced frequency. It was unfortunate. They were promised by the Scottish Government, the APD was going to be reduced by now, or certainly by the end of this Parliament, which is looming, and yet there is no commitment to do that yet. I think that's a very strong sign about how the danger of making promises you can't fulfil for any business, regardless of airlines. We are still very confident we can persuade the Government to do it within the next 2 years, but when you've got soft loads, as Norwegian had, and no guarantee of a very significant price reduction, and put it in context, it would be, if the Government said what they said, did what they said in the manifesto, it would take £39 per passenger cost out of that base. That's a very significant when you're trying to sell £300, £400 tickets. So the two parts is, will they come back? I don't know if they'll come back if the tax reduces. We will certainly try and make that case. I think whatever happens, it's a massive uplift to the opportunity for all service, but clearly long haul in particular out of Scotland if we do that. I'm still working very hard to persuade the government that their policy is one of their best and they should get on and deliver it. But political wheels move in slightly different speeds from commercial ones.
By the way, I think tying back to some of the themes you heard in our how we can work together, you know, it's an interesting one when you think about Norwegian and volumes. I mean, Gordon mentioned that the data sets that an airport has are pretty rich here. If you think about the data set, especially an airline like EasyJet have, we're not buying any data that has to do with long-haul travel. I mean, it's just not that core to us. We're not going to invest the money in it. I mean, an airport could be an interesting intersection here of kind of bringing together two parties if you recognize some of the flows that could go over there, some of the destinations that might work well together. That's an interesting way to work together to kind of bring the traffic and fill up a route that might otherwise not make it. Gordon, we have another question for you, which is, with the growth in partnerships, will we ever see airports become alliance affiliated?
I think you can see arguments, and you see this, obviously Heathrow does alliance terminals largely. So clearly there's a reason to respond to alliances for efficiency, for operational requirements, all the rest of it. And I think airports should think very keenly about where you've got transfer traffic, about how you make sure that's very effective. I can't imagine an airport would want to go exclusively to one alliance, because you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face, because there's always going to be other customers that don't fit that alliance. But I absolutely think where you've got that a volume that justifies bespoke and tailored services, why not? Yeah, I mean, that would probably be at the request of the alliance or the airlines rather than us being proactive. But, you know, if people are making good propositions, we would absolutely be up for that.
Yeah. We have another question here. How could we better work together to minimize disruption, and what data do you need to support this? You know, maybe I'll start and then you know, join in. Look, I think there's a lot we can do to work together. I mean, we you know, at EasyJet are thinking really hard right now around how do we best manage disruption in our airport partners, especially in airports where we don't have many of our own people, our own facilities, et cetera. I mean, that's where disruption is most likely to occur. And that's how we can best manage, you know, how can we work to manage it together? So what are the airport resources we can tap into, especially remotely, to help service some of our customers? And then you think about minimizing disruption. You know, we are right now investing quite a bit in new data and new tools that will allow us to better analyze disruption and better understand where is it going to occur, when is it likely to occur, and when we should be thinking about building our schedule differently. I mean, ironically, with the way the regulations are designed, if we ran our whole schedule with 2 hours and 45 minutes delay, we're better off than probably two flights with 3 hour delay. So can't see how that's better for the customer, but as Gordon said, probably not going to change. But again, I think our airport partners can best understand some of the unique constraints that occur. How could we better think about our schedules and shift flights that might serve the customer set in the catchment area just as well if we put it a different time of day and minimize some of the risks of disruption?
Yeah. The key for us is always going to be about visibility and early information sharing. The faster you can get out front of the problem, the better. It's got to be two-way because it depends on the nature of the disruption, whether it's emanating from the locality or emanating from network stuff. I think the biggest advance we've seen is the ability of airlines to talk to customers in real time through text and app. I think that's huge. Just telling people what's going on. Even more importantly, don't travel to the airport if it's cancelled or you know, whatever's happening. So avoiding getting people stuck is the biggest opportunity. And then having that two-way collaboration that if some are stuck, who's taking some responsibility for welfare and from information provision? I think we've got some really nice models of that. The latest big weather-related was actually quite a good example of how that's moved on. You know, you could argue that wholesale cancellations are not the best answer, but actually in the circumstances they were, EasyJet suspended its network for a day and a half at Edinburgh, and that was absolutely the right answer, because even though we were open entirely, if the other end of the route's not, you've not done anybody any favours. So I think we minimised the pain of that. Clearly there's all the background stuff about how you reschedule people or compensate them and all the rest of it. But what happens, we didn't have thousands of people sitting in the airport needing to sleep overnight in hard floors in the cold. And I think that's a great example of, you know, being pragmatic about what's the best thing for the customer and then get on with it quickly, succinctly and collaboratively to make sure that you don't miss too many bits of the jigsaw.
Yeah. Just even, you know, I'll be honest, what we find is, you know, just the basic information flow and disruptions is a lot of what the customers want. So to your point, you know, if a customer gets all the way to the airport, especially in many of these weather-related events, only to get there to find out their flight is massively delayed or canceled, that's really the worst scenario in a sense for what we see in terms of our customer satisfaction correlation. So how can we work together to get that information flowing better and in these disruption events so that our customers really can benefit? We have another question here from the audience. This one's for me. Is making a deal with airports important to you? And if any other airline would be able to get the same deal, is it still more valuable having a deal than benefiting from public incentives? Look, quite honestly, the deal is not the ultimate necessarily of what we're trying to do with every airport. What we're trying to get to is a cost structure that is sustainable to generate the service we want to give to our customers. We model out with our network team. We just finished, we've just kind of started on our summer 19 planning process. You know, we've already looked at something north of 500 new routes that we would consider in the course of summer 19. And we've already thought through some of the dynamics of those routes and what we need to make it successful. And so now we're working with airports to try and understand, can we get the structure in place to really make those routes work? And that's going to be either a question of the deal we're going to have potentially, it could be a question of public incentives. Quite honestly, I'm a little bit ambivalent as to where the money comes from, as long as we can get to the sustainable structure of a deal that's going to work for us. I know you've probably seen it from many other airlines as well.
So, I mean, you know, I don't let them fool you, by the way, every penny matters, but, we took 2.5 years to get the last deal done. But that's great. I've got huge respect for that. And actually what came out of that time and that hard negotiation, but that honest negotiation about what matters and how things are going to work, is we've now got a contract that incentivizes the right behaviors on both sides. Yeah. And I always think a contract's failed if you have to look at it, because if you're looking at the contract, something's gone badly wrong. We have now got structures that mean everyone wants to do the right thing all the time, because that's where the value is for both sides. Yeah. So I think that effort and that that hard work that goes into negotiation is really well spent if you don't just look at the pennies, but look at the structures and the rewards, the way things get rewarded and the way things get penalised on occasion, to make sure that people are looking at the right thing. And again, yes, it's commercial, but fundamentally it's usually driven by customer service and customer value.
As Gordon said, I'll make sure that them says he is right. The cost does matter to us ultimately at the end of the day, and anybody who's meeting with us, I'm sure that'll be clear. We have one more question in the pipeline. What does EasyJet think about the Irish market opportunity? I'll leave it with that one, which is come by our table, talk to us, and we'll be happy to fill you in on what we think about the Irish market opportunity. So I know we're running out of time here. Any other questions from the audience? Happy to take hands.
Oliver Clark from Flight Global. I was speaking to Bjorn Kjos in February, and he said that at the moment with EasyJet worldwide, there's a bit of an issue where people can't book Norwegian flights on the EasyJet websites at the moment. Is that something you're sorting out?
It's the other way around. You can actually book, he did say it that way, but it's actually flipped. So you can book any Norwegian connection you want through EasyJet. You can't yet book it through Norwegian.com. And that's just in the way the API is getting set up and a technical issue there. But we recognize that it is getting worked on. It's something we are anxious to get worked on because, I mean, quite honestly, how many people flying long haul right now are going to EasyJet.com to book their tickets? It's probably fairly small. So we really do want to see our long haul partners get as much benefit out of this as we do.
I think he said fixing it by this summer. Do you still think that's possible?
Yes, probably better to ask the Norwegian guys than us, but that's what we're hoping for. All right, well, thank you everybody very much for coming. Hope it was useful, and have a great time in Bilbao. Thank you, Gordon.
Great, thank you.